This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards. 50 years ago, a little company with a very high brow started a revolution. Cadman Audio recorded words instead of music. Suddenly, one could drop a needle onto an LP and hear the voice of T.S. Eliot.
Let us go then, you and I, when the evening is spread out against the sky like a patient etherized upon a table.
Cadman was the first to market spoken word recordings to book and record buyers. It became the seed for today's $2 billion a year audiobook industry. And it all began when two young women followed through on an impulse. NPR's Renee Montaigne talked with co-founder Barbara Holdridge.
Cadman's Barbara Holdridge was Barbara Cohen back in 1952. She and her best friend Marianne Roney had just graduated from Hunter College with degrees in Greek. Not much help in getting their dream jobs in the record business, which in any event was pretty much closed to a couple of girls, to use the vernacular of the time. One day, the girls heard that Welsh poet Dylan Thomas was coming to New York's 92nd Street Y to give a public reading. At the time, Dylan Thomas was at least as well known for his drinking as his writing. Barbara Holdridge remembers turning to Marianne and saying, "Let's go see him."
And she immediately said, "Let's go and record him." And we went to the Y and were snobbily turned away by the usher, who said, "Mr. Thomas will not see you." And we then wrote a note signed with our first initials and last names so that he would have no inkling that we were women. Little did we know. He would have been extremely interested if he had known that we were young and unmarried.
The gender-neutral note did get the attention of Dylan Thomas's manager, though, who suggested they call the poet at the Chelsea Hotel.
So we called, and he never returned the calls. After about a week of this, I made the heroic decision to get up at about 4:30 or 5 in the morning and call him. And that was a good decision because he was just stumbling in from a night of carousal, and he stumbled, "Yes, meet me on Saturday at the restaurant at the Chelsea Hotel." And amazingly enough, he kept his word. He remembered. We had lunch. He actually picked up the check, which may have been the first and last time he ever did that. But we had a wonderful time. And by the time we left, he had agreed to record.
Several missed recording studio appointments later, there stood Dylan Thomas, poems in hand. But not enough, it turned out, to fill a long-playing record. A catastrophe in the making, remembers Barbara Holdridge, since the B-side had to have something on it or they couldn't put out the record.
We said to Dylan, "Can you think of anything else?" And he thought for a minute and he said, "Well, I did this story that was published in Harper's Bazaar. It was a kind of Christmas story." And that was about all he remembered. I'm not sure he even remembered the title, but it was A Child's Christmas in Wales. We got the only file copy of the story from Harper's Bazaar with a solemn promise to return it. And that was dusting off something that would undoubtedly have remained buried and that became one of the most loved and popular stories recorded in the 20th century, and certainly gave us the start that we needed to become a viable company.
One Christmas was so much like the other in those years around the Seatown corner now, out of all sound except the distant speaking of the voices I sometimes hear a moment before sleep, that I can never remember whether it snowed for 6 days and 6 nights when I was 12, or whether it snowed for 12 days and 12 nights when I was 6.
There the two of you are, and he picks up this short story that he didn't remember the title of and starts reading. What was the experience?
The experience was momentous for us. We had no idea of the power and beauty of this voice. We just expected a poet with a poet's voice, but this was a full orchestral voice.
I turned the gas down. I got into bed. I said some words to the close and holy darkness, and then I slept.
Before they sold Cadman Audio to the publisher HarperCollins in 1970, Barbara Haldridge and Marianne Roney Mantell recorded many of the greatest voices of 20th century Western literature. Catherine Ann Porter, Tomas Mann, William Faulkner, here reading a fable.
"Don't be afraid," the corporal said. "There's nothing to be afraid of, nothing worth it." For a moment, the old general didn't seem to have heard the corporal at all, standing ahead below the other's high mountain one, beneath the seemingly insuperable weight of the blue and scarlet hat cross-barred and dappled with gold braids and heavy golden leaves. Then he said, "Afraid? No, no, it's not I, but you who are afraid of man. Not I, but you who believe that nothing but a death can save him. I know better."
When he came to the studio, we expected a professional reading, and we did get it to a certain extent. However, the baseball game was on that day, and Faulkner was much more interested in following the game and the scores. So we had to stop the recording every once in a while so that he could catch up.
The two women got to Ezra Pound in a mental hospital, St. Elizabeth's in Washington, D.C. He was sent there instead of prison or the gallows for treasonous radio broadcasts he had made from fascist Italy during World War II.
There he was, immobilized and unable to publish, and Pound was receptive to our coming to visit. It seems that all the literary world, or at least the young literary world, made its way to St. Elizabeth's in those days. He was a great mentor. One afternoon in the garden, he recorded Provençal poetry. And as he read this poetry, which was all about birds singing in the garden, all the birds burst into song. And that was captured on the recording, which unfortunately was later lost.
But still available here, Pound reading the first words of his poem, Hugh Selwyn Moberly.
"Mr. Styrax, Mr. Hecatomb Styrax, the owner of a large estate and of large muscles, of blue and a climber of mountains, is married at the age of 28. He being at that age a virgin.
In your mind, what were you hoping they would sort of give you, if you will?"
Well, I'll tell you what we were not hoping for. We did not want to do a collection of great voices or important literary voices. We wanted them to read as though they were recreating the moment of inspiration. They did exactly that. They read with a feeling, an inspiration that came through. This was what we wanted, Renee. We wanted our authors to read to people in the same way that the bards of old read, a communication directly to receptive ears.
"Reach in my purse and get me a cigarette without no powder in it if you can, Miss Bletcher, honey," said Leota to her 10 o'clock shampoo and set customer. "I don't like no perfume cigarettes." Miss Bletcher gladly reached over to the shelf, shook a hairnet loose from the clasp of the patent leather bag, and slapped her hand down quickly on a powder puff which burst out when the purse was open.
That's Eudora Welty reading from her story Petrified Man. Barbara Haldridge co-founded Cadman Audio, now celebrating its 50th year. I'm Renee Montaigne, NPR News.
Two readings by Dylan Thomas are at npr.org.